Hey, this is Len Kabasinski, and you're listening to the Cinema Psycho Show.
Oh, goody, goody, here it comes.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show.
You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here.
Oh, my God, don't stop now!
With your hosts, Ryan, John, and Elaine.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show, the madhouse for film freaks and film fans of all types. I'm your host, Brian Connington, joined my fellow co-hosts and filmmakers, John and Lane Woolscroft.
I'm in my bat shirt, my bat hat, I got my bat action figure ready to do my bat dance, and of course I pay for all of it on my bat credit card expiration date forever.
Quite wow. The outfit you've got going on, the bat-somble, if you will.
Yeah, you've got a bat-somble going on. Now, why are we talking about all this bat shit?
Because we're crazy.
Guano.
This guano. Yeah, we're in episode 141, and if you listen to us a couple weeks ago, we talked about Catwoman, probably one of the worst fucking superhero movies ever to come out.
I wager the worst movie ever to come out.
It is one of the worst.
Just, are you putting it into the running?
Just a salty, stale cat turd, that movie is.
A salty, stale cat turd. Good goodness.
So
we figured with the 30th anniversary of this particular film coming up, I think it's this week.
Yeah, well, this will drop a few days.
A few days after.
Because the anniversary is like a Wednesday or Thursday or something. Yeah.
So with the 30th anniversary coming up of this film, and honestly being one of the films that, I don't know about you, John, Lane, but for me had a very big impact on my appreciation for filmmaking.
Ooh, boy,
and just movies in general. We're talking about 1989's Batman.
Yep. Yeah, this is a very special kind of spotlight episode.
Yes.
Because we've always wanted to talk about it, but where did it fit into any of the type of the shows we did? But, I mean, 30 years, this is a landmark thing and reminds us just how goddamn old we all are.
It's a little depressing, but I know it had a much bigger impact on you guys because it wasn't really marketed to me as a kid.
No.
So John really introduced me to this movie. So.
Well, when did you first see Batman?
You don't. You're not gonna.
You
like
got.
It.
You gotta, t- gotta tell me.
What was I? What were we? 22?
I showed it to you.
He
right?
showed it to me. I was 22.
Well, you grew up very sheltered, more or less, when it came to movies, right? Because you didn't have cable, didn't have any of that stuff.
No, I had cable and stuff. It's just, I mean, it was very heavily marketed to boys, really? and I enjoyed some marketed to guys stuff. Like I loved the Turtles, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but just Batman just really wasn't on my radar. It didn't really feel like it was something for me, And looking at this film, like I can see why, like the female character,
And that is a criticism we'll get to about it.
Do a drinking game every time Kim Basinger screams.
Don't, you'll die.
You
want to
know something funny? Growing up, that was the one thing my mom could not stand.
Like
we had the VHS tape of Batman, and she would be like, I love the movie. I just can't stand Kim Basinger screaming. And I still remember being like 5 years old, her complaint about screaming.
Not the never ceasing Prince music.
That's a good thing. Trust. How dare you?
Hey now. That was a decision created by cocaine. Trust. Okay.
Oh.
That was a cocaine fueled decision right there. Right. Our first episode was on Batman Returns. And I know I figured
in
the
Wayback Machine.
In the Wayback Machine.
That's so deep in the archives. There's some cobwebs on it.
A little bit. It was a little crickety, a little rusty. But, I know we got talking. We're like, we never done Batman. And that's like one of our favorite films.
And, we've talked in the abstract about the Nolan films. And
Tim Burton.
And we may be doing a really that awful on Batman Forever.
Woo-hoo.
So. And I guess we just need to.
I think that's a combo on Batman and Robin, too.
I was going to say, we would do a pantheon of other shit on Batman and Robin, and then we'll just Batman ourselves out.
Batman.
Oh, bat jizz.
Yeah. Just drop a bat load.
A bat load.
Robin, hand me the bat load.
So in the beginning of this bat load here, 89 Batman is, for me, it's important on two levels. One, personally, like this was the movie that, like, you know how most kids say that there is one movie that they remember, and that like there was a first film that they can remember. Yeah. For me, this movie was the first film that I can remember being like, "Holy shit, this is amazing!"
Yeah,
and like it locked me in. Like I played my VHS tape to the point where it broke.
Yeah, I was right there with you. I was 4 years old.
Yep.
My parents took me to see this in the theater three times.
I never saw it in the theater.
Oh,
that's the thing. I did see this movie in the theater, like at a Lowe's years ago,
like one of the re-screens.
Yeah. And it was amazing. Yep. Like I that was the experience I always wanted, was seeing this film in the theater, and it is very different from watching it on TV on a VHS tape. But you know, for me, I got the tape. I think I got it for Christmas, and I just played that sucker over and over again. Like every day, I'd be watching Batman. And it got to the point where I was obsessed with it, and I still am to this day. You know, that was 30 years later.
Yeah, that was the. I think it was probably the same Christmas. That was my sister and I's big Christmas gift. And I mean, of course, like that Christmas, I got the Batmobile and the Joker action figure, and some T-shirts. Yep. You know, and that was the thing about this movie is there are some pinnacle blockbuster movies. You know, history. Like, oh, Jaws was the first big summer blockbuster. Mm-hmm. Star Wars was the first one to really like cash in on, you know, outside of the movie, and but they didn't realize that at the time, and they went, oops, we should have made some toys and stuff, and so that came after the movie had come out. This was one of the first times I really remember the merchandise before the movie coming out being bigger than even
it was
the
crazy
movie. Batmania,
it was insane.
It
was literally insane, the amount of merchandising. And like I remember that summer being fucking crazy.
Bat sunglasses, bat fanny packs.
And to this day, there are people who, like, they're like, you know, a movie may come out, like even the Avengers, you know, I don't even think any of the Marvel films have been able to hold a candle to the level of insanity that Batman brought up during that summer. Like, it was insane. Summer of 89 was insane when it came to the amount of bat craziness.
And the strange thing is, the audience was very scared that this was going to suck, but apparently the corporate America did not think so, because there was Taco Bell, McDonald's,
that's
Diet
the only time
Coke.
I've ever seen McDonald's and Taco Bell share merchandise.
Well, I always thought I always thought that was weird a year later when the Turtles, like Domino's and Pizza Hut, were both
They are united in their love of money.
How? Yeah,
yeah. Because in the movie it was Domino's, but in
you got all
our
the adverts
world
for Pizza Hut,
it was
in
it was
the real world.
In the real world, it was Pizza Hut. You know,
and I guess that was the split. Like you'll have it on screen, but we're gonna get all the come in and you'll get a dollar off your ticket to go, which in 90 would make the movie free, I guess.
Yeah, but I think what's also worth noting about Batman, you know, we talked about how personally it affected us. You know, this movie set, like I would say this kind of ushered in, I mean you could say Superman did it too, but I think Batman more or less ushered in the golden age, I think, of superhero films.
Yeah, because with Superman, like Superman is almost an icon even outside of comic books. So it's like, oh, it's just Superman, like he's like Elvis or you know Daniel Boone or you know whatever. Batman really felt like the true first comic book movie, because like I said, like Superman was a monolith in and of himself.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, we can actually make some money off of these here comic book movies. But unfortunately at the time they didn't have the money to do like Marvel movies or like the technology. So we got like after this like The Shadow and The Rocketeer.
Well, we got we got some movies that were trying to be Batman.
The Phantom.
Oh my god. That's a movie we could do after review, because it's horrible.
There's a pantheon.
It's horrible.
Billy Zane and his hairpiece.
I like the Zane and his hairpiece.
Yeah, Ghost Who Walks. you know, but like you had movies like Darkman that came after this.
Ah, yes.
Which
Sam
I love.
Raimi's
I love.
Darkman.
I love Darkman. Okay, yeah. I'm one of those rare people that loves Darkman. I even love the sequels to Darkman, like Die Darkman Die.
Was
that's
the
actually
one.
That's the third one.
I was about to mention Die Darkman Die.
There's Darkman 2, The Return of Durant, and then there's Darkman 3, Die Darkman Die.
Did you guys get that? Did you all write it down?
Did you all write it down? They're very complex titles.
Right?
Very complicated.
Put Darkman into your Google machine.
Oh, here's another note about Darkman before I get on this. The guy who plays the mummy, in the mummy movies, Imhotep, he plays Darkman in the sequels.
What?
Oh.
So you've got Liam Neeson as Darkman in the first film, which he's crazy in it.
Okay.
Like they literally, Sam Raimi said to Liam Neeson, go nuts. And he goes nuts. Yeah. And then they got, I think his name is Arnold Vosloo. He plays the Dark Man in 2 and 3.
Well, why do you need your star the movie? Why not get some guy who's barely an actor?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, as I said, Batman kind of created this golden age of heroes yeah. because, you know, we did have the kind of pretenders that came out. You know, you had like Meteor Man, which I love Meteor Man, and Darkman.
Don't undermine your own point.
I'm not undermining my own point.
Blank Man with Damon Wayans.
There's a little bit of me, okay? It's nostalgia. Shut up. But, you know, this did kind of create a golden age in the 90s that Batman really led when it came to superhero films. Everyone wanted to try to be like Batman. And I happen to believe that that failure of that golden age with Batman and Robin, I think it's safe to say that Batman and Robin pretty much killed Batman.
Oh, yeah. They not only pulled the plug, but they also smothered it with a pillow
yes.
and then set it on fire.
Yes. Yeah.
it really stopped the entire franchise in its tracks.
Comic book movies.
And it just became such a joke.
But the point is if you didn't have that inflection point, if you didn't have that point of it going crazy, you wouldn't have gotten Nolan, you wouldn't have gotten X-Men, you wouldn't have gotten Blade, you wouldn't have gotten any of these other movies that led to what we have now.
Well, I always think film years are like dog years. Like, it was only 3 years between Batman Forever and X-Men, but that seemed like 20 years. And people were like, we were so jaded and pissed off about Batman and Robin that when we saw the X-Men, we went, how are they going to screw this up?
Well,
I mean, it has its faults, but
if you think about it, that 3 years, that gives them enough time to see what happened with Batman and Robin mm-hmm. and then completely reverse their script for whatever they were going to do. You know, I don't know that the behind the scenes of creating X-Men, but I happen to think that, you know, looking at 97,
yep.
Batman and Robin coming out and then just going like, oh, man, we have to make sure we don't do anything like this. that's an impact.
The only thing I can connect is the black latex suits, which apparently all superheroes have to have form-fitting black latex suits.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So enough about the abstract. Let's actually get into the meat and potatoes of Batman.
Well, I don't know about this movie, guys. Did you know that they cast Mr. Mom as Batman?
Yeah,
he's not even really that big, and he's a comedian.
And they also cast the guy from The Shining.
Yeah, well, and
as the Joker,
that Tim Burton guy. What did he do? Like Pee-wee? I don't know.
And Beetlejuice.
Yeah, and I heard it's going to be funny, like the TV show. I don't know about this. I'm going to write some fan mail and tell him how upset I am about this. And hopefully, unless I see a trailer, and
if only there was a public platform where I could express my distaste,
almost kind of like a book of faces,
have everyone. The world could see, or a space that's mine,
or a space that's mine, or a Twitter
live journal,
or a Twitter. And that's why, like, when I heard this whole Robert Pattinson stuff come out about him now playing Batman, I'm like, you know what, guys, this happens every single time. Yeah. There is a casting. This happened with Michael Keaton, in which he got death threats.
People were not happy.
Yeah, our whole sketch there was that people were up in arms.
They lost their shit.
For the director, for the main actor. Before there was social media, there was a huge letter writing campaign to say, recast Batman.
Yes.
Not Michael Keaton. He's not my Bruce Wayne. And
the thing is with a character like Batman, there have been so many different iterations of him by different artists. Like, you have Frank Miller's Batman that's very bulky.
It was like 7'9", like 400 pounds.
Yeah.
But then you have, like, you know, the Dennis O'Neill Batman, which, you know, that's from the 70s and early 80s. Like, there's different styles of Batman. So there's no one type. You know, you can, and of course, the Adam West Batman is Batman too.
Yeah.
True.
So, you know, everybody has their own version in their heads of who Batman is. Now, and I would say that if you really want an accurate portrayal of Batman, look at the animated series that came a couple years later, because most people would consider that to be Batman.
So good.
Yeah.
But
was influenced by the Tim Burton Batman. You know?
And there's a lot of blurred lines with the different types of media there, too, you know?
Yeah, because they always wanted to kind of, but not really,
be
connected with those movies, you know?
And then the games that came later are very, you know, related
the
because
show, which is
a lot
the
of the
movie,
same
yeah.
voice
yeah.
actors
very
too
much.
In the games.
But that always bothered me a little bit in the TV show that he was so ginormous. I don't like it when Batman's ginormous, because you think, okay, if you're Batman, you have to be rich. There's only so many rich people in Gotham. What about the guy who's 6'6" and so is Batman? I think I could piece this together. Like, Christian Bale, like, body type. because I think Michael Keaton, you know, it might be my favorite. Kevin Conroy in the discussion. But Christian Bale body type, he had more of like the ninja muscularity kind of thing. So I think that body type makes the most sense because he can still kick ass, but he can actually blend in.
Yeah.
You know, but sorry, getting a little off sidetrack there.
The point is that, you know, every single time that there is a announcement of who's playing Batman or in the case of Dark Knight, who's playing the Joker. Because if you remember, like when
I freaked out over Heath Ledger.
You really did?
Yeah, I was like, the guy from A Knight's Tale, he sucks.
He was not really happy. Yeah. He was not happy.
I had a little bit of faith because I had seen Heath Ledger in other movies. Because I think a lot of people thought of, oh, that's the guy from Brokeback Mountain.
Well, no, you know? Brokeback Mountain hadn't come out yet, had it?
When they announced him, I don't think Brokeback Mountain had come out yet, but it was like months away.
Okay.
And that was the only time I was actually impressed by him, and I was like, well, he's still going to be a shitty Joker, but he was good in the Brokeback movie.
Yeah. And people also thought of, like, you know, 10 Things I Hate About You, which he was in that, too.
Which is a great movie,
and you can suck it. No, I'm just kidding.
You don't like it?
No. Oh no. I thought you guys were gonna shit on 10 Things I Hate About
You. No, I actually don't mind 10 Things I Hate About You.
I like that movie a lot. I thought,
out of all those teen movies,
I thought John was gonna take like a monster dump on it, and he didn't. So.
What, you mean The Taming of the Shrew?
It's supposed to be that, though.
Right? Yeah.
It's not an accident.
The point is that there's always some sort of controversy when it comes to Batman and even the characters.
And like come at me, bro. Like Pattinson, I think it's gonna be fine.
It'll be fine.
But I would say
the movie will suck, but it probably won't be his fault.
Well, I mean, maybe it won't.
I mean, I'll give him a chance, just as like I give anyone a chance. I even gave Ben Affleck a chance, and he spit in my face.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm excited about Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker. So.
Really? I'll give it a shot.
I'm more intrigued by this movie because it's like it's not part of our DCEU, and there's no Batman, and it's an origin story of the Joker. I'm like, what are you guys doing?
They're trying to do like a one shot, like they do with comic books.
Multiverse
shit, Elseworlds crap. Yeah. You know, like that's what they're trying to do. But I think the problem is that with film, you know, everyone's going to try to connect it to something.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what the Marvel movies have unfortunately taught us now is, oh, they're all connected. So, yeah, they're going to look at the Joaquin Phoenix Joker and say, okay, how can we move that in with the Robert Pattinson Batman? You know, especially because the Jared Leto Joker was not good.
It's like they're rebooting, but still keeping it the same at the same time. This is the DCEU, folks.
Yeah. So anyway,
but the trailer came out. I think we need to mention that.
That's the important thing is that, you know, because of the backlash from the casting of Michael Keaton as Batman, they were forced to put together this very rushed trailer.
And it's very rushed. Can I say something controversial?
Oh, man,
it's
bad.
The trailer sucks.
Yeah.
I think it sucks for 2019. I don't think it sucks for 1989.
They could have put some music under it because the cuts in audio, when it's like, hi, Bruce Wayne, Vicky Vale, then just to the bat. Whoa, what is this?
They had the on-set screens.
Yeah.
Like when the guy falls down from the catwalk and he's held up by Batman and he's like,
cut. Oh, no, we had a cut in there.
But they had to put this out because they were afraid. And they also put out documentaries. Like there's some documentaries on YouTube that you can find that were made by Warner Brothers at the time that they were getting ready to do the marketing for it, that they're trying to say, hey, look what all this work that we're doing for this movie. We've got Anton Furst doing the production design, and we've got this person. Look at the bat suits, and look at all this. And they're
trying... Look at our giant penis bat car.
That still is my dream fucking car. I don't care.
Me too. I want that giant black wiener.
You want to say that Shields. Again?
Hashtag
giant black wiener. Just like, I am looking at my phone, not looking at John right now.
I don't want to talk about the bat wiener anymore, guys.
Yeah. Look, Kim Basinger got into a giant black wiener. And I'm talking about a car, guys. What are y'all laughing about?
Can we stop talking about
giant black wieners?
But people were buying tickets to, you know, fill the in trailer. The blank movie. And it's a 100-seat theater. And as soon as the trailer for Batman was over, 50 people would leave. They would buy a ticket to watch the trailer and leave. Like, I don't want to see, you know, Naked Lunch.
Naked Lunch.
Sex, Lies, and Videotape. No thanks. Nightmare on Elm Street 5, whatever else is out at the time.
That was about it. Yeah. But, think about it. They didn't have YouTube back then. You couldn't just watch it 10,000 times. You had to go and actually watch the trailer in the theater.
And tickets were reasonable then. It's like $2 for a movie. I'm sure everybody was like, $2, rip off. You know?
I remember when it used to be 50 cents.
I remember it used to be 50 cents and a quarter.
And you could get a moon pie to ride on the trolley.
Yeah, so, you know, this movie then, it came out, and let's start talking about the plot of this. Because I think there's some argument now that this movie is a good movie, but it's not a good Batman movie.
Oh.
Well.
You want to get into that? Because that's an argument that some people come up.
It's
contemporaries.
Tricky.
It is tricky.
Because you... When you have something in a different medium, you want whatever artist is doing that in a different medium to bring what they're going to bring to it. And I don't understand people that it's not exactly like the comic book. Well, read the comic book. You don't want it to stray ridiculously far. But obviously, this is riddled with Burton.
But here's the thing. And this is the nice thing I like about this movie versus Batman Returns. Is that Batman Returns, they basically told Tim Burton, do whatever the fuck you want. We don't care.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Go Timmy Nuts.
With this one, though, it feels, and this is where I guess the conflict comes in behind the scenes, it feels like you had someone who was like, I have some knowledge of the comic book here, telling Tim Burton, pull it back.
Yeah.
And that's the nice thing I like about the 89 Batman, is that it's got enough of the Burton with some of that, my guess is the Michael Ursulon and John Peters and Peter Gruber getting in there saying, you got to pull this back a little bit.
Which are the psychotic producers of this movie? If
Michael Ursulon's not a psychotic, but Gruber and Peters are crazy. When we talk about the coked out depiction and you know picking Prince, that was him.
Yeah. If you guys ever see any interviews by those two guys, they are just the most out of touch Hollywood maniacs that you will ever see.
They are
the stereotype of like the crazy coked out Hollywood producers who don't understand how the world works.
I think
the whole Prince thing came from then they owned Geffen, or they had a stake in Geffen.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, we forget Prince was like the biggest star in the world at the time. Yeah.
And they were like, well, you know, we've got that Prince guy. Yeah. Let's get him to make some songs.
The kids will come to the movie because Prince is bad.
Yeah.
Bad.
And there are some bad songs.
But that's why they shot at Pinewood Studios. I've heard Tim Burton say in interviews, I went to England to shoot this to get away from them. Like, they could only fly in once a week.
Yeah.
And so, like, they weren't over my shoulder all the time saying, hey, what if we took Kim Basinger's top off? We'll get more people if we see boobs. Like, no.
Boobs.
It's PG-13. Yeah. Can't see boobs. You know.
But I do think that having that influence did, you know, kind of cap the eccentricity that Tim Burton has. It's like, it's a little bit controlled. You know? I mean, obviously, there are changes in this that... you know, looking as a comic book fan, you're like, why is the Joker the one who killed Batman's parents?
Right.
Which that was controversial.
That is. Oh, yeah. I think that still is.
And even people like Kevin Smith, who are giant comic book nerds, have said this is ridiculous.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, because there are very subtle things you can ignore. Like, oh, Batman's suit wasn't completely black, but really, who cares?
I thought it was fine.
Oh, the Gotham City doesn't look like it does in the comics. It looks like Tim Burton made it. Oh, well, we can ignore that.
Who the fuck says that? Because honestly, the depiction of Gotham City in this movie...
This is the one Oscar it won,
This is the one it won Oscar,
With the art direction?
Anton first won an Oscar for the art direction of this. And the art direction of this is insane. It is literally insane.
It looks like Fritz Lang had a seizure over the screen.
Well, I think they described it. They described it as if the city planners of New York had decided to not plan anything and just... It erupted out of nothing. Like, that's what they said, is like, there's no planning.
Oh,
you know?
Another drinking game. If you see smoke coming out of a pipe, a sewer drain, out of nowhere, like, it's just smoke.
Yeah. Oh, my
You
God.
Drink for that,
But
too.
I'll also ask you this, and this is the one thing that always, as a kid, I never quite understood.
Yeah.
What year does this take place in?
Yeah,
it
that's
takes
true.
Place in 1940, 87, 2005, 1956, 64. Yeah. They, you know, they made a very conscientious and very, I think, a very smart decision.
I thought it was smart.
Yeah, that it's no time. They have the 30s feel, Like, because, like, all the Joker's goons are, like, in, you know, top hats.
Well,
and,
some of them are.
Not top hats.
Some of them, like,
fedoras.
Yeah, you have sometimes when they're in top hats and fedoras. And, you know, they're in 30s, you know, zoot suits. Yeah. But then you also have them wearing, like, the puffy coats.
Right, and Batman's got a TV.
And, you know? And ball caps. And, yeah, Batman has cameras and TVs and computers and shit. And there's covers of Vogue magazine. And Time.
It's really hard to tell.
It is. It's very difficult to tell. And I think that's great that you can't quite tell.
Well, guys, when did this disaster happen in the Cordon Maltese?
The Cordon Maltese does not exist.
I don't know.
But yeah, that was where Vicki Vale got her photograph and chops. Shooting that. But yeah, it's very interesting because, like, they obviously wanted that old. I think that somebody wanted it to have the old 30s charm from when the comics came out, but then the script had, like, yeah, modern cameras and VCRs, and they're like, well, let's just make it both.
Yeah. But I think that is nice because you're kind of getting this other world. Like, it's not necessarily a matter of where, you know, the Dark Knight series was all about how could Batman be practical? You know, how could he practically exist in our world? Right.
Yeah.
You know,
how gritty and hard would a human being have to be?
Yes. How could a real person be Batman? And that was it.
Right.
Which that's a different take. That's perfectly fine. But what I like about this is you do have that stylized. It's a time period you cannot place on your finger. And it's got, like, the best bits of different time periods, you know?
Yeah, and we get introduced to Batman right away. The script says, like, because there's a mugging that happens. And when I was a little kid, when I first saw this, when I was, like, 4 years old, I thought that that was Batman as, like, when he was kid. Yeah, it was very confusing when you're a small child.
Oh, yes, it's the 30s. Yeah. So, yeah, that must be Bruce Wayne. He's going to get mugged. And then, huh?
Yeah. But obviously, Batman's like, oh, hell no. Happened to me when I was a kid. I'm going to avenge these people. And in the script, when he goes, he moves, it says, you know, atop the building on a skyward view, a perfect sight of the mugging viewed by gargoyles. Suddenly, one of the gargoyles moves.
Yeah.
You know, something along those lines.
Really cool.
In this case, it's an animated Batman.
Yeah. A little stop motion there. but yeah,
it's a Tim Burton film. There's got to be stop motion somewhere.
But Batman kicks the shit out of these goons with his Nike sneakers and product
those
placement
Nike
there.
Boots, custom made by the company
for
him.
Was
and the
I think that was another Gruber in Peter's place.
They're gonna give us so much money.
They had to collaborate way, but they found the best way to do it.
It's not obvious. I mean, it is if you know to look for it. But
yeah, but I mean, they're custom made. It's not like you could go out and buy them.
But it's a great way to introduce him because, like, you know, he's telling one of the goons, like, you know, tell all your friends about me and, you know, in the whole who are you, and this is where these producers were insane. The original line that they changed in the script that they wanted was, I'm Batman motherfucker.
Are you serious?
I'm not joking.
Yeah. It actually says I'm Batman motherfucker.
Wow.
Yeah, and other people with the studio and Burton himself were like, we're gonna get an R rating, we're gonna lose the audience because we want kids at this, you know, we can't have Batman motherfucker. And they finally relented and just, I'm Batman.
Well, I thought that was originally going to be I am the Knight.
Oh, okay.
I have heard that.
I heard the original script was I am the Knight.
Yeah.
And which I'm like, okay.
Yeah, so I'm the Knight became I'm Batman motherfucker to I'm Batman.
Yeah. I never saw Batman as someone who would drop F-bombs.
Yeah.
Not to say that I don't think he would. I don't think he's someone who would drop F-bombs. But
although if any Batman was going to do it, would be the Keaton version.
It would be the Keaton version.
You want to get nuts?
Let's get nuts.
Yeah, so at that point, we're then, you know, we see Batman in all of his glory, basically. Like, that's him at his peak. We then cut to
Lando Dent.
Lando Dent. He seriously is Lando in this. Yeah. Like, he's got he's a little flourish. He's got the little red flower on his lapel, and I'm like, oh, that was a thing that people did back then, didn't they?
This house of vipers.
Yeah, yeah. So
make it nice for decent people.
We've got Billy Dee Williams as District Attorney Harvey Dent, and of course Bruce Wayne's little placard is sitting there. He's absent because he's Batman. Yeah.
He's doing Batman things.
He's busy, you know, doing fascist justice against the police without police force permission.
Right. He is kind of that way. But, you know, basically, this introduces us to a couple different things. We're introduced to kind of like the political thing. You know, the mayor of Gotham City wants to do this 200th birthday thing, celebration. But, of course, you know, Gotham City's a shithole and has a severe organized crime element, namely with Jack Palance's boss, Grissom.
Jack Palance.
Which I'm like, they're like, hey, you know, we can get Jack Palance in this. Oh, you mean Dracula? Yeah, we can get him.
I've made 100 movies. How many fucking movies have you made, little boy?
It's true.
That is a line that he said to Tim Burton when Tim Burton was trying to direct.
Are you serious?
What a dick.
Because he's like, hey, can you bring it down a little? Because you're chewing the scenery and you're a C-minus actor who's more of a celebrity than you are an actor.
I imagine.
I'm sure he said that in a nice way.
I can probably pinpoint the exact scene in which he told him that. It was probably his, your life won't be worth spit.
Yeah, he's.
I was thinking, Jack, don't forget your lucky dick.
Yeah. No, but I figured it was the your life won't be worth spit.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I've made 100 movies. How many fucking movies have you made, little boy?
Well, I mean, that's where Tim Burton has to, you know, grow a pair and tell him to, I'm the director, asshole.
And that's when somebody behind the set said, don't worry, he's only here for 2 weeks.
Yeah. But yeah, so the landscape is basically that Jack Palance is the head of the organized crime in Gotham City.
And Dent and Gordon are
starting to get into their front companies. Yeah. Because that's the whole thing. Because basically the mayor says, I want this 200th birthday special, which I'm just like, why? No one does this shit for a 200th birthday. But
you fill up this square and the business is what's return.
Well, come back, yeah. I promised that. Remember? Yes, I can recite a lot of this movie.
I don't know, man. They're scared.
So, you know, also with this scene, we do get introduced to Jack Napier, who is the Joker in this, which is interesting because in the comic books, the Joker doesn't have an identity.
He has like 20 origins and none of them are true. 20
different origins. None of them are true.
Well, maybe one of them is, but we'll never know.
We'll never know. Yeah. So Jack Nicholson plays Jack Napier, and he's kind of in this the opposite. No,
Jack Nicholson plays Jack Nicholson.
Well, I want to get to that. As Jack Napier, before he turns into the Joker, he is the most subdued I've ever seen him in.
Because he knew he was going to go batshit.
But seriously,
about the 50-minute mark.
Those scenes of him are the most subdued I've seen him in any movie. Yeah. Any movie that he's ever been in. Like, I could go all the way back to, what the hell is it? Movie with the plants. Oh, Little Shop of Horror.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh yeah,
and that's our opening bumper. yeah.
Don't stop now.
Yeah, but seriously, like you can go all the way back there, or even go back to like The Raven, which he's in The Raven as well.
Oh yeah, the Corman
film.
Yeah,
and he's never subdued. So you watch this, and you're just like, why is he so subdued? And then you realize, as you said, that he's gonna be insane for the rest of the movie after this. So he's basically Grissom's number two, and he's banging Grissom's mobster girl,
which was when remember when we all thought Mick Jagger's girlfriend could act?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sick burn. Yeah.
No, it's true. Yeah. So she plays Alicia. What the hell is her name? Jerry something.
She was a supermodel. Jerry something or other, I think.
Yeah.
Jerry Jagger.
I got nothing, guys.
I got nothing. Yeah. I don't have IMDb. I'm going all
purely off of
purely
seeing
off
this movie
of
10,000 times.
Yeah.
And seriously, all the documentaries on it and everything else.
So, you know, ultimately, there is some tension between Jack and Grissom.
Because Grissom knows.
Yeah.
Because Jack's not too subtle about it. Like, he basically gives, like, fuck eyes
well,
to his
he gives fuck eyes
Grissom's wife.
He gives fuck eyes, and on top of that, he, like, you know, thinks that he's going to be the number one guy eventually. Like, he's going to eventually run the city. You know? Like, yeah, it's no big deal. Grissom can't run the city without me. You know? And ultimately, he's proven wrong because Grissom tries to kill him.
Well, and let's face it, he was a grade-A nutball, and Grissom knows it. He ain't got no future, Jack.
You talk about Eckhart.
Yeah, Eckhart. We forgot about Eckhart, the crooked cop.
Which I imagine that he's like the Harvey Bullock of Gotham. Yeah. Everyone's just like, oh, God, not Eckhart.
Yeah. You mean Porkins from Porkins. New Hope?
Was that Porkins?
Yeah.
Holy shit, yeah, I didn't know
is.
That.
It is.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
John wow. and I make that joke every year.
He died and got reincarnated. Well,
every time
Batman.
He blows up at the Battle of the Death Star, I say, think about the future.
Yeah.
But it leads to, you know, Jack Napier and his goons think they're going to clean out Access Chemicals
because it's one of the front companies that Dent is going after.
But it's already been cleaned out. It was an elaborate way for Jack Palance to want to like kill Jack Napier because his other guys are going to go down too.
Yeah. You know? But those my guess is that, you know, Grissom figured, well, those are Jack's guys. Yeah. You know, so those are his guys. So they're going to be loyal to him. So I got to kill them too. But yeah, there's this you know, shootout between the cops who are working with Eckhart.
Batman learns about it.
Batman learns
about the big gala at his house.
Yes, that is. I'm skipping over a lot of parts.
Well, I mean, we're really really summarizing because we're talking about more of like art. You know, and it's where he meets Vicky Vale.
Yes,
Kim Basinger, who is in her best Roll Tide that she probably ever.
Really?
That's probably height Basinger, I would say.
This hurts. This hurts.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be height Basinger.
So, all right, you two.
He meets
that,
and of course we get our delightfully, I think, third scene of Robert Wool as Knox.
Oh. You know, if there's a criticism to be laid at this film, it is fucking Knox.
Yeah. Robert Wool just being allowed to be Robert Wool. Go do your shtick, Bob.
Yeah. Yeah, you can see where the R-list is coming from, because it's coming from that.
Yeah,
because
Knox is like a nosy, snoopy reporter, you know.
He's the only one who believes that Batman
exists.
Exists. Because everyone thinks that he's a myth, that he's kind of like a vampire who drinks blood and shit. But ultimately, Robert Wall is the only person who thinks that he's a real person. Yeah. And he wants to get a story on him. He wants to get a file on Batman. That he believes Commissioner Gordon has.
Wait, who? I mean, was it Commissioner Gordon in this movie? I really couldn't tell. Yeah.
Could not tell.
And that's the thing. Commissioner Gordon is so important in every other iteration I've ever seen of Batman. Fat dude. Yeah, does nothing.
Don't worry. It's going to get worse for Pat Hingle.
He has no intuition.
It's going to get so worse for Pat Hingle in the next couple films. Because it's going to end with him frozen.
But it leads to, you know, that big shootout at Access Chemicals.
Yeah.
Batman and Jack Napier have their first confrontation.
Yes.
And then weird editing, like where Joker goes to shoot Batman. It ricochets off his glove.
It ricochets off his gauntlet.
And then it hits some acid that hits him in the face.
I think it ricochets off of his glove, smacks into like some sort of machine or some sort of like, you know.
So was it sparks that flew?
No, I think the ricochet of the machine thing slashed its face. Because you see his face already has the cuts on it. So it's ultimately like those are the Joker cuts.
Yeah.
You know, because I was looking at this again when I was watching it for the show, and you can see that there's clearly cuts on his face. Yeah. But ultimately the ricochet happens and he's hanging, he falls off the ledge and is holding onto the railing of it, and Batman's got his hand too. And I don't know why Batman lets him go.
Well, there's a great debate there. Because
does Batman let him go?
There's two schools of thought on it. Batman somehow, even without even consciously realizing it, remembers him and drops him. And then the other idea is that, like, you can clearly see the strain on his face. Like, he couldn't hold him any longer and lost the grip.
Oh, interesting.
I would argue that it's the second one.
Yeah.
Because if it's that he remembers him, that completely negates the later scene in this film where he does remember Napier. So I would argue that he loses the strength of him.
You know? I think that's correct.
But there's a debate.
There's a
on
debate.
The internet,
you know,
on it.
There's a debate.
Yeah. But yeah, the Joker is born, and you get a delightful scene. Like a few scenes later, after we get a never-ending date scene between Vicky and Bruce. Can you pass the salt?
I don't think I've ever been in this room. Yeah. Shut up! Shut up!
But of a a dolly shot from right to left, and on the wall says surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah, so good.
And then you must understand that the nerves were completely severed, Mr. Napier. Oh,
speaking of wow. Little Shop of Horrors, a lot of the tools in that scene were recycled from Little Shop of Horrors.
Really?
Yeah.
No
That's
kidding.
That's cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
No kidding.
But yeah, so we get his birth scene, but we don't see it, the infamous mirror scene. We don't see what he sees. Because we're going to get the big reveal when he goes and takes out
Grissom.
Well,
it's a very iconic scene, too. They homaged it in The Simpsons.
Oh, yeah. You know that you made it into classic pop culture thing that The Simpsons
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
Very true. So, ultimately, the Joker comes for Grissom. He shoots him dead and takes over the city, basically. He takes over the organized crime. And really, he starts right off the bat.
Right off the bat?
Ah!
I don't get it.
You're waiting for that one.
I'm good.
He starts off the bat, by having that board scene where he's got the weird makeup on his face. And I was reading how they did this because I always thought that he had like a cloth that had that white makeup on it.
Yeah, that's what I would have figured.
And that's not it.
Ooh.
They actually did a special makeup procedure in which they had the base coat was the white. They put like petroleum jelly or something like that on the top of that. And then put that brown makeup over top. To get me the skin tone.
Wow.
So that he would rub it away and you'd see that white that was still on there, that undercoat. A lot of makeup techniques were done
That's really cool.
To kind of suit that. Because I always thought, he must have just had that, something white in his hand that he just wiped it across. But no, that wasn't it at all.
And if you're at all confused, it'd be weird that you're listening to a podcast on a 30-year-old Batman movie if you haven't seen it, but when the Joker, he's completely deformed, he has white face, and
to kind of pass off as normal,
he puts makeup on to have a normal skin complexion and has his hair dyed from green to like a normal color.
But he starts picking off like the other organized crime figures that are loyal to Grissom, so he electrocutes Tony the joy buzzer.
Because nobody wants a war.
Nobody wants a war. If we can't do business, well, then I guess we'll just shake hands and that'll be it. So he electrocutes him and has a conversation with the corpse.
That's not
which
weird
this,
or anything.
That scene really epitomizes the type of Joker that we're getting, which, as you alluded to, is basically Jack Nicholson playing Jack Nicholson.
Yeah. Murdery it's, and crazy.
And to craziness. Go back, they were willing, because they said, it was Jack Nicholson or bust. They were willing to give him whatever he wanted.
They fucked over Robin Williams to get
Jack Nicholson. Yeah, they fucked over Robin Williams
twice.
Bad.
They fucked him over twice.
Because they did it again with the Riddler.
Yes.
Down the line. But yeah, they basically used Robin Williams as a ploy to get Jack Nicholson on board.
You didn't know that, Lane? Yeah. What they did was they went to a bunch of other comedians and Robin Williams was someone who really, really, really wanted to play the Joker. And almost kind of like with Sean Young when she wanted to be Catwoman for Batman Returns.
Sean Young was actually the original Vicky Vale.
She was the original Vicky Vale.
But then she like fell off a horse and broke her butt or something.
Broke her butt?
But ultimately with Robin Williams, they were like, oh yeah, we'll use you. And they used that to go to Jack Nicholson and get him on board.
That's shit.
And ultimately, they gave Jack Nicholson a sweetheart deal, in which, honestly, he is making money off of Batman
to this day.
And it's we're not talking just 89 Batman. We're talking the royalties of anything Batman.
Yeah, that was a
anything Batman,
deal.
And that will and honestly, it that's a deal that shows how. In dire straits, Warner Brothers thought they were with this movie because of the bad press that they were getting from the Michael Keaton casting.
And the thing is, he also got that I don't shoot on weekends. I get to leave when the Lakers are home in the playoffs.
Yep.
They
gave him everything.
Everything.
They gave him everything.
Can you imagine just for a second? I mean, I don't know. I'm just not that type of person, I guess. But can you just imagine? You're trying to do this collaborative art form and you are so prolific, you're so famous that you just call the shots in that way. Who gives a fuck if the Lakers are playing, dude? everybody's got to work. Like, what makes you special?
Because he's Jack
Nicholson.
Have
you ever seen on, like, ESPN, those classic NBA games? Jack is, like, on the court. Like, he
is every game.
I know. And I'm not saying he's not a big fan. I don't know. Like, I would never want to be like that where I'm this, like, delicate little human where I'm
you know what?
I want my basketball game and I'm not showing up.
Here's the way I look at it. The way I look at it is, this is peak Jack Nicholson. Like, this is him at his peak.
It's true.
You know, this is coming right off of, like, Witches of Eastwick, and, of course, off The Shining, and, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So, like, this is Jack Nicholson realizing his worth.
Yeah.
Well, he knew he had them, like,
he had him by the balls. Yeah. He had him by the balls.
I just can't imagine being like that, is my point.
Yeah. I mean, as I said, I think this is just Jack Nicholson, you know, trying to exercise his star power. And as I said, and him at his peak.
I don't think he did this for anything other than profit. You know, sometimes you're like, oh, I really want to make this movie because of the director or the script or because, oh, it's just a great role. I read an interview where somebody was like, you know, Jack, you're a big time, like, movie star in the art picture world. Why are you doing this, like, children's comic book movie? And he's, the kids don't know who I am anymore.
Oh, that's a very valid point.
It's like, I want to make Batman so the kids, like, I'm hip again.
I mean, that's a valid point. As I said, the movies that he was doing prior to this, as I said, Witches of Eastwick, I think, was like, what, 87 or 88?
86 or 7 somewhere, yeah.
I think it might have been 88. So it was right before this. So, I mean, like, you know, that's a movie that, you know, adults were watching. So, I mean, I get completely why he would want to do that.
Reds and Terms of Endearment. The kids love those movies.
Yeah, yeah. So, and of course, you know, this doesn't to say that, you know, he didn't want to work with Tim Burton, because he ultimately did work with him again on, like, Mars Attacks.
Yep.
You know, years later.
Where he was like, I'm going to play two roles because fuck you.
Because I'm Jack Nicholson. I can do whatever the fuck I want.
I was sitting in the movie theater. I'm like, wait, is that Jack too? Is he also that guy? Amazing.
Yeah, he is. So getting back to the Batman 89, you know, the Joker in this is, as I said, it's very much Jack Nicholson playing himself. To the point where, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, from a certain age group will say, oh, well, that's the Joker. And not realize that the Joker in the comic books and in other versions is extremely different. You know, is more maniacal. And that's kind of what the Heath Ledger Joker ended up being, was more from the comic books.
I would say that Jack Nicholson is the pinnacle Joker on appearance.
Yes.
You see Jack Nicholson on a poster and you go, oh, that's the Joker.
That's the fucking
the
Joker. The
eyebrows. Yes. The grin, you know, the devil may care, you know, eye stare. You know, it's, yeah, and there are things that he does that are very Joker-like, but there are some things that are, you know, Tim Burton Batman variation Joker-like, you know, so it's...
A lot of those weird scenes where he's, like, dancing with a picture of Vicky Vale, you know, like, that's a Tim Burton thing.
Because he was of a mind to make a Mookie. I still
have no idea what the fuck he said.
I'm of a mind to make some Mookie. Or make a Mookie.
Is that what he said?
I'm of a mind to make a Mookie. Bob Carr.
Bob Gunn, please. Yeah, I still, for the longest time, I never understood what the hell that meant.
It doesn't. No, I mean, even though I've figured out what he said, it still doesn't make any sense. It sounds like he's going to poop.
I thought,
I got to make a Mookie.
A Mookie in my pants.
Because I think what he's saying is, I'm going to jizz in this bitch, but, like, it sounds like before we go talk to this nice lady, I'm going to drop a deuce.
I don't understand.
Either that or he's going to go to the bathroom and you know, blow one out first.
Well, I think, okay, so here's what happened. Peter Gruber wrote in the script, I'm gonna fucking jizz in this bitch until she cries. And they're like, Peter, that's a horrible line on so many levels. And then, Peter left? Okay, hey, Jack, say that, but, like, in a way that's confusing and we can kind of get away with it.
I got it, kid.
And it's like, I have a mind to make a Mookie. It's like, but did anybody know what that means? Nope. Cut. We're out of film anyways. For the day.
Yeah. So the Joker in this is very strange. Yeah. I do want to get a little bit into, you know, kind of, and again, another weak point of this movie would be Vicky Vale and the relationship she has with
I mean, Batman. Just how now, Lane,
what do you think about this? The telling of this female character in this?
I think it misses the mark. Like, you could have done a lot of cool things, but it falls into that. You know, obviously this is 89, but it develops into more of a 90s trope of like being like successful as a woman is supposed to be like a big deal, and like she's like sarcastic and like that's supposed to make her strong, like
she likes bats.
It doesn't, yeah, I mean, it just doesn't work.
I like bats.
I don't know, it just doesn't work. Like, her, none of her dialogue is very good, and like, I don't know, I feel like it's been nice to see comic book movies move away from like the woman who needs to be saved, like the woman can save herself. I just feel like it falls into a lot of stereotypes, and I mean, other than it, you know, pissing off the more like feministic notions of my brain, it also makes for boring storytelling. Like, you know,
that's very true. I mean, I would say that the relationship that she has with Bruce Wayne in this is one of the weaker ones. Like, I think
she has sex with him because he's rich.
Yes.
Mysterious.
Mysterious.
Yeah. Mysterious. Yeah. He says, "Wow."
Has sex with her and then he hangs upside down. You know, in the middle of the night.
It's like, okay.
That's creepy as hell.
I went to this weirdo's mansion. He had me sit at a giant ballroom table for 80. And then eventually his weird butler told me stories of when
his
he was a kid.
His old manservant said he was like a sack of potatoes.
Yeah. And then we drank a bunch of wine. And then we only had missionary sex where he didn't make eye contact. And then he was hanging upside down in the middle of the night. And I was like, I'm in love.
He's the man for me.
He's the man of my dreams. Why won't he call me back? Oh, let me go stalk him.
Yeah.
Let me go stalk him. Like, I always thought that was her. I'm like, she's crazy. She's fucking stalking him.
She's a reporter guy. Well, she's actually
she's a photographer.
Photographer, yeah.
And I feel like that's like a trope too, where it's like she's a reporter, and like, no, you just made her a nosy bitch. Like,
yeah.
There's nothing layered about this portrayal.
Well, the weird thing is, by 89 standpoint, like, she was like the next Princess Leia by the late 80s.
It's true.
She's strong. She's got a job and a great apartment and a disturbingly good apartment for what is like Gotham's
that
Manhattan.
Apartment, my God. I would definitely move in.
My God, that apartment. No one can afford that apartment now. Jesus Christ, what are you talking about?
I'm into it. I like it.
But I thought the dialogue she had was just atrocious. Like, as I said, I joked about the I like bats thing, but I never understood that.
Mm-mm.
She just has a fetish for bats, and she's just okay saying it.
It's like, okay.
Like, I like bats, you understand? I like them.
Who sent you?
Okay. Who sent you? Yeah, I like bats. But yeah, it's, the dialogue is horrible for her.
Well, she's in the movie for two reasons. To give Batman a case of the not gays, because it's 89.
It's true.
And also,
you're right,
to give Joker a case of the not gays, but more importantly, she's a plot device to bring... Yes. Batman and Joker together, instead of just Joker's stealing some diamonds and Batman shows up and punches him a couple of times.
There has to be a reason why he has to fight him. So yeah, I felt like the relationship they had really wasn't solid. You know, the dialogue was shitty that Vicky Vale had, and there really didn't seem much chemistry between her and Bruce. Besides just the hanging upside down and, you know, fucking thing.
Well, I don't know. When she came into the Batcave, because Alfred let her in, I thought there was a lot of chemistry there.
He's fired.
With her and Alfred?
He's fired the next day.
I ship Vicky and Alfred.
I want you to get boned so badly, I'm going to let Vicky Vale into the Batcave and give your secret identity away. You know, considering that you also, like, molested her the other day because she took a photo of your face and you reached into her boobs while she was unconscious to grab the photo. That's how much you wanted to keep your identity away from her. I let her in.
Well, yeah. I mean, he was in her bat cave. It's only fair that she gets in.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think it was just a cave and his bat got in there because they're great survivors.
Yeah. But no, he would have been fired. Oh, yeah. He would have been fucking fired that day.
But that is a heated contention thing. They even bring it up in Batman Returns, like, hey, who let Vicky Vale into the Batcave? You know, it was a decision made by the producers. Once again, I feel like that's a running thing we've had.
That's important to note.
Yeah. But yeah, this leads to an eventual showdown where Joker has decided, because Batman blew up Access Chemicals, has been thwarting him left and right, that he's going to, after he can no longer poison all the people of Gotham. I feel that's very underplayed. He's a domestic terrorist and has killed countless people.
He is terrifying. Yeah. I mean, that's the sort of shit you worry about, you know, and seem crazy for worrying about.
But he decides that he's going to throw a parade. And one of the most mind-bogglingly, like, how did this possibly work, or they think this would work, that the Joker is basically telling the police where he's going to be.
Yeah.
And they don't try to arrest him. He's like, I'm known domestic terrorist, Jack Napier. And
Joker.
Yeah, Joker now. And I'm going to throw a big parade in the middle of town where I'm going to be dumping cash on all the poor people of Gotham. Like, this is going to end well. This is not going to have any problems. And all the poor people of Gotham show up, and he gasses all of them.
Yeah.
And then he blows Batman's Batwing out of the sky, which, you know, when the Batwing came in there, it's like available in toy stores.
Because it was a toy.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch it now, and I think this is because of the like Ultra HD versions and the 4K stuff.
Yeah.
You can see when things are models now. Like that's one of the things. Like, I watched that for the show, and I was like, that's a model. That's real Batman. That's a stunt double. There's a little action figure, and there's Batman again.
there's a benefit to doing your cinematography in almost complete darkness.
Yes.
You can cover up quite a bit.
Like, especially in the scene where he's fighting the ninja guy with the swords.
Yeah.
Another Gruber and Peter's recommendation, by the way. you can tell when the stunt double is in and when Michael Keaton is in. Michael Keaton is only really in there for the beginning and the end.
There's a couple different Batmans in this movie. Like, I recently have found this out that, like, they had a ballet performer do some things, like, because, like, when, like, the cape twirls and things like that to add, like, a little bit of, like, you know, flair to his movement.
Yep.
You know, there was, like, a stunt Batman, so there was more than just Keaton one under there.
Yeah. But, yeah, the parade scene happens, and, like, as a kid, I loved it. But watching it now, you're just like, is this really the worst thing you can do? Like,
how did he get a permit? Did he go downtown?
Well, like, what's interesting is if you read the comic book adaptation of this movie, which has a lot of the elements from the script that weren't in there, it's actually revealed that the dollar bills that he's showering everyone have the Joker's face on them.
Yeah. And that's hinted on earlier when
my face on a $1 bill.
Yeah, what he wants. So it's not even real money, which is just another dick move.
He's the Joker. Get it?
Yeah.
Get it?
Aw, I was going to pay off my student loans.
And now I'm being gassed to death. Unless I'm Knox, and then I get gassed and hit by a car, and I'm fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's inexplicably indestructible.
Yeah.
Fucking, like a cockroach.
Fucking hate Knox.
Yeah, like a cockroach. That's basically a good way to put Knox. But Batman shows up, gets all the balloons out, saves a few people.
He saves a few people who haven't gone insane already.
But then, after missing with when he has his pinpoint target accuracy, misses him by 50 feet, Joker pulls out his 15-inch cock and just blasts him out of the sky.
It's true. It's true. That's a phallic reference.
Yeah.
You think?
That's such a bizarre... That's such a Tim Burton choice.
Well,
I want you to pull out a revolver with a 25-inch barrel that
How
somehow...
How could you walk with that?
Yeah.
Even... How could you walk around with that thing in your pants?
That can somehow blow a, like, sky tank out of the air. And Batman was trying to murder him, right?
Yes.
Because he shot those goddamn grenades
right
at
him. See, here's the thing. A lot of people complain about, Batman doesn't kill. No.
Batman does.
This Batman don't give two fucks.
Once again, I hate to just keep saying this over and over again. That was the producer's decision. They said, we want to make him badass for the 80s, so we're not doing that whole no-kill thing.
Yeah.
Because he would become cooler if he kills people.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, here's the thing. I can see reasons, pro and con, for him killing. Because even if you go all the way back to, like, the first Batman comic books, he had a gun.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he shot people. He had a gun. You know, it wasn't Batman didn't kill. That wasn't until later.
Well, the original incarnation of him was more like he was like a detective who's dressed like a bat.
Yes,
you know, he carried a gun because the cops did, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it leads to Vicky Vale, who was there to be taking photos. Joker kidnaps her, you know, because he...
Because reasons. He kidnaps her with his giant gun. Well, he kidnaps her with the giant gun.
Yeah.
His dick.
Which, I feel like, if that blew the Batwing out of the sky, it would just disintegrate her.
Collapse his dick down. And then later, he shoots it and says, pow.
Yeah.
Get it? He's shooting blanks.
Yeah, but he takes her up to the top of the cathedral because he's got a helicopter waiting to get him out of there. The police finally show up. And he
try to do their job.
Yeah, he disintegrates the bell in the clock tower, which is clock tower church, whatever. Churches have clock tower, I guess. Yeah. And it blocks the entrance, which apparently is the only door in. And Gordon's like, oh fuck, who wants to lift it?
Does he try to like lift it?
Yeah, he tries to push it in.
Dude, you're not moving that giant cast iron bell.
He gives it like a little kick, like, ah shit. Yeah. So much.
You're not lifting that giant cast iron bell. Fuck you.
But the only door, they just go, let's go home.
Yeah.
That's it.
Put up the signals.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But Batman was already in there. You know, we get like a bunch of gratuitous fight scenes
and walking upstairs.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're like Batman.
That ending is one of the most boring sequences ever.
I love it.
I was bored to tears as a kid.
But like, you know, that Batman kills another guy by throwing him down the clock tower. There's no way that guy's not dead.
Yeah, that guy's dead.
Like one of Joker's goons. And it leads to a confrontation because when Joker was doing the whole, like, I'm doing the parade, he paused the screen and he remembered, you know, we've mentioned the controversy that Jack Napier was the one that killed his parents.
Yeah.
When they really seemed that much older than each other, but...
Not that much.
And the actor they got to play young Jack Napier, great casting.
Oh, my God.
It's spooky how much it looks like him, you guys. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is, like, obviously it completely diverges from the comics, but I love the whole idea... You know, I made you. You made me first.
Yes, that part I did think was cool, and honestly, it made sense to me. You know, as I said, when I first saw this, I had no reference of the comic books. I literally just saw this as, holy shit, it's Batman, and you know that made sense.
Yeah,
you know that the joke this is a more of a revenge movie rather than a fighting a faceless
He was avenging. Entity. You could say Batman was the first Avenger.
Oh. Like what you did there. But yeah, he ultimately punches him over the ridge of the cathedral.
Which he somehow like lands on this tiny little platform and
pulls Vicky Vale and Batman off.
Because we need to have that, you know, scene of them almost falling to their death.
Which again, Batman kills the Joker.
But
don't kid ya.
But here, okay, so that's a good question. Did he intend to, or was the gargoyle just so shitty that it broke off? Was he trying to keep him from leaving, or did he always know that that was going to pull him down?
He wanted to kill him.
All right.
He wanted to kill him.
I wonder, though.
He didn't try to save him.
Yeah. Well, he was hanging for his life.
Man's got grappling hooks. He didn't try to save him. He was falling to his death, and he used a grappling hook that quick.
Well,
he didn't want to save.
There was a random goon that he didn't save.
Random goon,
like earlier, and threw him down a shaft. That guy was just basically working with the Joker so he could
put food on his table. Batman was getting the shit kicked out of him by that goon.
But do you think that Batman's going to save the guy that killed his parents if he didn't save that guy?
No. This Batman gives no fucks.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing with this Batman, and we didn't mention this yet, is that Tim Burton, when he designed this Batman, designed him to be crazy.
Yeah.
That's a crazy person.
That's why Keaton was cast, because he said, I could see you being so crazy that you would dress up in a latex bat outfit and go punch people in the middle of the night.
Yes. Yes. That is ultimately what it was.
Yeah. And Keaton uses claustrophobia of being in that thing as part of his performance, because it's terrifying in there.
Yeah.
You can't hear. You can barely see.
Yeah.
You know, you're sweating horribly.
And the way that it was crafted, they actually figured out a way to make the cape out of latex as well. And the suit and the cape were actually several inches of latex thick in some places. So that baby was hot.
That's a Bob Ringwood design, which he's notorious for making everything out of fucking rubber. Like he did the still suits in the movie Dune, David Lynch.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
So even in those, like, everyone was complaining about how sweaty and how much they were exhausting to wear, And that's just him. That's his design. He just always does that. And the costume design in this is fantastic. I love the 89 Batman costume. Even though when you look at it, you're just like, it's not that complex. Like, compared to the Nolan suits, it's literally just molded, you know, body part pieces tacked onto a rubber undersuit. Like, that's it. You know, a lot of it went into the actual cape. It went into the cowl. But that's it. It's not a complex bat suit.
No. And the movie basically ends with, you know, Vicky going to cover the news conference.
Well, the Joker falls to his death.
Yeah, Joker falls to his death. He has a little laughing box in his coat pocket.
I always thought that was great.
Yeah.
I always thought that was annoying because, like, after that scene, you'd still hear it in your head.
Yeah. But yeah, they're covering it, and apparently Batman sent a telegram to the police and said, hey, you guys are incompetent, so if the evil forces ever rise again, call me. Hey, question, how do we call him?
How do we call
him? He gave us a signal, which he apparently can see anywhere.
Which, okay. Yeah. I don't want to get into that because...
We've been there. We've been down there.
Okay.
You don't want none of this, do we?
But. Listen, Bruce Wayne would be taking a shit. How can he see the goddamn reflected mirrors all over his goddamn house? Okay, I'm sorry.
He's got one in the commode.
He's not just hanging out in his study all goddamn day.
Don't you think Bruce Wayne would have figured to have one of those things in the commode?
Listen, I don't want to...
Why rely on a complex mirror system, asshole?
You know, he's a billionaire. I think he has nice bathrooms, Brian.
No, you know what I think it is? I think it's because the same person who designed the Rube Goldberg machine in Pee-wee's Big Adventure is the same person who came with this goddamn concept.
But,
How dare you.
So how do you guys look at this as, you know, because I feel there's two ways to look at it to kind of wrap things up.
Yeah.
How does it hold up to when it originally came out as compared to, you know, how does that... I'm stuttering horribly.
It's okay.
let me try that again. How does this hold up to when it first came out and to, as compared to all these comic book movies we've had since, you know? So, because I remember when this came out, this was the greatest action movie ever in my mind. It's what made me want to be a filmmaker. Yeah. You couldn't do a better comic book movie. I mean, obviously that's a large discussion. But, you know, I thought this movie was flawless at the time. As I've grown older, there's a lot of problems and a lot of issues. And there have been other movies that I think have done superhero things better. But this one will, I think, always be number one in my heart. But that's a lot of nostalgia talking too.
Okay. For me, I'm very much in the same boat as you. You know, this was one of the films, like, for a long time, it was the only film that really made me want to make movies. You know, ultimately, other films like Hellraiser and Lucky McKee's May kind of, you know, supported that even more. But for me, I would say that it holds up in terms of the visuals. It holds up in terms of some of the things that are captured visually. The style that you're seeing in this film, I have not seen yet in any other film. Superhero films nowadays feel very digital, very devoid of that tactile nature. This has a tactile nature to it. You know, even though you can see the matte paintings, you can see all that stuff, it still feels like, you know, that's Gotham City. It's really there. People are interacting with real things. And it doesn't feel, it feels like it's an actual adaptation, not necessarily completely ripped from the comic books. And I think that's the problem that a lot of comic book movies have now, is that they're looking at, like, the literal comic book in front of them and saying, okay, how can we reproduce that frame? And there is a difference in that going between those mediums. Some places where I think it doesn't quite shine so well, we mentioned it. I think some of the writing isn't quite solid. I think some of the story structure isn't quite solid. You know, it's not that it's a bad thing. It's just it's something that hasn't aged really well. As Lane mentioned, and she's probably going to mention again, the female characters are not designed really well. I think we really have taken a step up, at least in the past couple years, for crafting female characters a little bit better.
How dare you? Candy Walker and Amanda Keeler are very, very layered.
No, but... I love that scene. But, you know, I think some of the visuals are the highest points of this. You know, Anton first won an Oscar for a reason. And that's probably one of the only times I would say an Oscar was absolutely, completely 100% worthy is because of, you know, the 89 Batman. And none of, and you can see because I believe, I think he passed away before he did Batman Returns, in which Batman Returns, you can kind of see that and go like, this is like trying to be Anton first, but not.
With a little Nazi Germany.
With a little Nazi Germany shit thrown in. Yeah. You know, there. I think the visuals are the biggest point. You know, you get a grandiose nature of this. The cinematography was amazing in this film. You know, I take it over any, even modern day, like Dark Knight Rises and all those other films. I still think they don't hold a candle to the visuals that are seen in this. Like, especially that scene, the shot where Batman walks through the cathedral doors. It's haunting.
Yeah.
You know, that's, oh my God. Like, even when he's suiting up and you've got that light on him and he moves his head up, it's just a simple montage of him suiting up, but it's so grandiose that I don't even think, you know, Iron Man suiting up holds a candle to Michael Keaton suit up as Batman in this Agreed. Film. You know,
before, yeah, Lane, right before you give your comments, I just want to ask Brian, as both of us being super fans, Tim Burton, is he invaluable to this film? Was it the cast, or not cast, but hiring him as a director, was it him or nothing, or do you think another director could have done this?
I think for the time, I don't think any other director could have done it. I think Tim has a very vision that's rooted in the dark. I think that what he needed, though, is what he got in this, which was a capping force. He needed someone to rein him in. Yeah. You know, and that you know, if for better or worse, you know, Gruber's and Peters were that, you know.
Yeah, I think especially, you know, for this film, its importance is in its cinematography, and that's of course, you know, Tim Burton decisions. Mm-hmm. I think that this set the tone for future comic book movies in some unexpected ways, you know, where you can have a huge art movie, you know, actor like, you know, Jack Nicholson, you can have artistic art direction. You can take art direction from cues from, you know, art history, you know, with like German Expressionism and that sort of thing. Cause you can see a lot of that in this film. And I think that it didn't seem like it at the time because it is still a slave to several extremes. But I do think it set the tone and elevated the genre, even though we wouldn't see that for quite a few years later.
Right. Definitely.
As a final thought, I do think it's interesting they killed the Joker because they thought, well, we're going to make one film. We don't know if it's going to be successful. Mm-hmm. It's not like a comic book where he's around for 50 years. Now it's, well, we're going to sign you to a 15-picture deal. We're going to make 300 of these.
Right.
They're like, well, we don't even know if this one's even going to work. So we'll just kill the Joker.
It was a different time.
We're just going to conclude it. Yeah.
It was a different time. Back then, you know, superhero films were still considered, you know, like a gamble. They were still considered a gamble. They weren't a done deal. And this movie was part of the reason that it changed that focus.
You know, interestingly, this movie made a fortune, and they thought it was going to be the highest grossing film of all time. But
wrong.
I think when Last Crusade came out, that it just replaced it at the box office, and it just took a nosedive after Last Crusade. And I think it ended up.
You mean UHF didn't do it?
Domestically, Batman actually came in second to Last Crusade.
Right.
Globally, Batman was the highest grossing movie of the year. Right. But yeah, I think we could talk about Batman forever.
We
so
could.
Maybe, or well, nah.
Yes,
Batman until the end of time. Let's not say that.
Not forever.
So, forever. That 30 years of the glory that was Burton and Prince and Gruber's and Keaton
and, when's and the
Nicholson.
Anniversary, John?
Yeah. No, why are you pulling him on that
June
right now?
June 16th, I'm going to say. Now
yeah,
we're going to find out.
I think it's that.
If I am right.
Oh, look at
and
this.
And now we're going to just have.
It's been 30 years.
30,
no, been
yeah. 30 years. 30 year. I think it's June 16th.
And, you know, it was a big summer release, you know? It was a big summer movie, and it's one of those things that I think is very iconic.
Mm-hmm. June 19th.
June 19th. Okay. Yeah. But.
So, way to put me on the spot, broski.
Sorry, a little holiday to look forward to.
That's
we should watch the movie again.
I think we should. 30th
Definitely.
Anniversary.
Awesome. I think we, as I said, I think we could talk about Batman for forever. John, where can
we could have done this as a five-parter.
Yeah, that's right. John, where can they find you at on the Twitter machine?
The Unreal J Wolves.
Lane?
You can find me at LA_Croft.
You can find me at Brian Content. I also run the Psycho Show page. Be sure to like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google Plus, at Psycho Show. You can also find us on the Epicast Network at epicastnetwork.com. If you have a favorite movie or question you want to throw away, you want to talk to us about your Batmania, you can contact us at the cinemapsychoshow.com. And make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and iTunes, and we will see you next time.
Make sure to only download our podcast and not Brand X.